Einstein before the traffic light. That was the first minion. How is Simon? Where is he?
He's coming. But the recorders are here. And
the recorders are here.
Okay, we have to get it down to a science. Close the door, please. If anyone wants to come in, they can open the door.
Okay. I switched the microphone. Let's see if it's better today, because yesterday we had problems. We're ready to roll. Everything is rolling, Yomo? Okay. This gentleman came, how many years ago did you come on a one-year visit to Israel? How many? Almost 30 years ago, and he had no intention of staying, and someone said to him in Toronto, "What are you going to do, Jack?" And he said, "I'm going to look for good shayurim." So this foolish person told him,
"My nephew Michael."
Your nephew Michael. Look up a shir given by Rav Rakefet in Gris. Right. And the rest, as they say, the rest is history. Yeah. Okay, we're good. And that's his wife. Who has big yichus. She's a first cousin to one of the great Rashi Yeshiva in the YU world. She's a Rosenzweig. So you're looking at Michael Rosenzweig's first cousin. All right, we're back just where we left off. First of all, today is the 20th of August, 2018. And a good morning to the students in front of me, and a good morning to all those listening across the wide expanse of the Jewish mind. Today is a down-to-earth shiur. Yesterday we dealt with a question that's one of a kind. Next week you'll see the Noda B'Yehuda. I consider it one of the oddest questions ever asked. The Noda B'Yehuda had to deal with a serious dealing with Kaddish. You'll see yesterday's shiur when it goes up. There it has to be arranged, but it's Kedesha Yasha. Today we're back down to earth, the history of Torah in the United States. We're dealing with the rabbinic organizations. We're dealing with the Agudas HaRabbanim. We're dealing with Reb Lazer Silva. And Reb Lazer Silva, you have to understand, was the top Rav in the United States, maybe in the world, outside of Palestine, outside of Israel. No one had his reputation. We're talking the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, into the 60s. And he was the last of the Mohegans, because no one talks of Rabbanim, everyone talks of Rashi Yeshiva. And he was a man who was a Rav, a Shtut Rav, and he achieved such prominence. What we're talking about today, we're finishing out the Kashrut. We're going to have a lot of earth-shaking material, but we want to talk of finish out the Kashrut today. I also want to make you aware, everything I speak about today, basically, of course, Reb Lazer Silva is the president of the Agudas HaRabbanim, but a young man is pulling out his sleeves and following him, and that is Mori Rebbe Reb Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik. And as Yitzchak told his audience on Shabbos, he expressed thanks to a person who did so much research on the Rav by the name of Aaron Rakefet. I can tell you this was one of the shocking revelations that I had from my research. Because Yitzchak, we grew up, you grew up in Boston, you grew up with the Rav, you robbed Akshatin from him, not just in the yeshiva, but in Maimonides, right or wrong. Did you know about his close relationship with Reb Lazer Silva?
I must tell you that I did not know a lot about the Rav until I came to New York.
All right, Beseda.
I realized that he was considered the Rav.
I remember you and your friends telling me in the 1950s that, gee, do they respect the Rav? Anyone sees him, they stand up. He says, in Boston, it's not like that. Either you told me that or one of your Moshe told it to me. But after I did all my research, I bounced it off Tova, and Tova told me I was absolutely correct. In other words, the Rav's original dream of America, he comes in 1932, a greenhorn who was mastering the language. I met people whose mothers told them, old time people from Boston, Vic, their mothers told them that the Rav stood in front of a mirror and spoke, gave drasha to the mirror in English to polish his English. So a lot of what we're talking about today, the person who accompanied Reb Lazer Silva was the Rav, and this was his introduction to the American rabbinate and kashrut and the problems that went on, and these problems haunted us. You will see the statistics, I'll quote it later. Do you realize that in the 1930s and 40s, it was estimated, let's stick to the 30s, 40s gets a little bit better. The 1930s, the 1920s, it was estimated minimum 40% of what was stated as kosher was not. Other estimates go up to 50%, as high as 60%. Could you imagine what we're talking about? Reb Yosef Weiss, Zeichet Tzadik Livracha. So I remember Reb Yosef Weiss told the class, and he said he doesn't know whether it's true or not, but he told this to us in 1953, that a Jew came to America from Poland, an Elach Yid, and he saw what's going on in America. He vowed he's never eating meat or poultry. That's it. So when a person vows they're never eating meat or poultry, you have to have protein. So what was his protein? Peanuts. After years and years of eating peanuts, he finally found out that they were roasted in lard. And this Reb Yosef Weiss told us. And by the way, you should know that before World War II, shortening lard was a real problem. Then it was discovered it's not that healthy. The same thing with gelatin. You should know that really fish gelatin is infinitely healthier than meat gelatin. And really, the only gelatin in the world should be fish gelatin. We should never have a kashrut problem. The only thing is, fish gelatin is twice the price of animal gelatin. And that's the problem. Manufacturers don't want to use it. With vegetable versus lard, it reversed. Lard, once they started making vegetable oil by millions of tons a year, it's cheaper than animal fat. Cheaper than lard. But this poor guy lived in America, 1900, 1910. Vic, he might have been your neighbor on the east side, for all you know. But could you imagine, he ate peanuts. All right, now, the problem, and here I'm moving further, if you recall the last thing we spoke about, that Reb Lazer Silva goes to Cleveland, and he tries to straighten out Cleveland, and they're fighting, and they're killing each other, and you really ultimately got nowhere. There were vested interests, and the Rabbanim did not have the ability, the power, to control the situation. The greatest problem that they faced was all these individuals who owned kosher plants and treif plants. And here you have to understand, money is money. Treif, fine, is easy to work. But the kosher industry, you could get twice the price. Take a look what kosher chicken costs and what treif chicken costs. Go into a supermarket in New York. It's shocking, the difference in price. All right, I can understand. Kosher, you need a sheichet, you need a bodek. Today they have to be makshir. They have to pack it in a shuway. You have to have mashkichim. It costs more. There's nothing you can do about it. But the temptation to cheat was overwhelming. And here they tell stories, and I'm quoting to you from the Silver Era, from my second work, a work that's gone through four editions, and Baruch Hashem, it's an honest work on what was happening in America in the 20th century. And I hear you can get all the details, but the great problem was you own treif kosher. So here Reb Lazer would be called into cities, and he would take the Rav with him, and they knew this guy had a kosher plant and a treif plant. Unannounced, Reb Lazer with the Rav would go into the treif place and push their way into the office past the secretary, like movies. You know, you see movies where they push their way into the office. They'd open up the desk And in the desk drawer, you would find kosher certificates. And time and again, treif meat was being passed off as kosher. Finally, the Agudas HaRabbanim published the Cherem. This goes back to the 30s. But we Jews never can accept authority. Take a look what's going on now. Running mayor of Yerushalayim. No, to the best of my knowledge, you have four people running who are Shomrei Shabbos. The lady and my is a friend of my daughter knows her, she's a Shomeret Shabbos. How much she knows about Yiddishkeit, a question. I wish she would have studied with me in Michalara, Midrashit Maria, or Machon Gol, to understand what Torah means. It's not to be an observant Jew. You are not a Catholic, you're not a Protestant, you're not a Mohammedan. It's on one level, a private level. On the other level, you're part of the Jewish people, and I have enough Divrei Torah on this to fortify my point, and Simon to give Shem for 1 year straight. But if I do that, I won't be teaching the course I'm supposed to be. So Simon, I expect you to take off 49 years and listen to YUTorah.org. Charlie, Deutsch, the Elkin, the other guys running. And then you have the Mechalalei Shabbos running, who are catering. We also live in Letlev, etc. We drive Shabbos. You don't have to drive, okay? Jews can't take authority. And even here, where you have such a logical conclusion, there were rabbinical organizations, and we spoke about it in New York, the big Machlokes. We'll come back to it again in a second. Rabbinical organizations who said, what are you talking about? Treif and kosher under one roof, it has always been some time immemorial. And it's what I told you, a slaughterhouse. Have you ever been in a slaughterhouse? Show me one kosher slaughterhouse that is only kosher in the world. By definition, if it's impossible, because 25%, 30% of what you're going to slaughter is going to be treif or nevela. By definition, it's impossible. You follow me? Challenge someone to show you that there's a kosher slaughterhouse. Only kosher. Impossible. So in a slaughterhouse, what happens is, if you've ever seen a slaughterhouse, anything that's treif, that's nevela, they put big signs on it, they stamp plumbers on it that say treif, the teif. Alright, it shouldn't get mixed up. But you can't help yourself. You can't slaughter 1,000 animals and throw out what comes out treif. A slaughterhouse has to stay in business. But here, the time and again, there would be these problems. Now, these problems have not disappeared. And what are we pointing to? Two new students, Baruch Hashem. Yitzchak, you talked it good. Time and again, I'll take, next week I'll take all the names, okay? Simon's name I got to know because he was a Yachid Bemino yesterday that had to suffer through the Kaddish story. Slaughterhouses, all right, you can, it's right under, but Charlie, you want to know something? When the Rav gave Shia, the Rav, it's unbelievable what comes back to your mind. Bididi Haviyuvda, I was sitting right here, the Rav was sitting where I'm sitting. Here the Rav sits in this chair, but in those days he sat in this chair and I sat here. So, Bididi Haviyuvda, the Rav, everyone bothered the Rav, So when he gave shir, the rule was you're never supposed to, the officers were, you know, Mr. Abrams, the yeshiva. You remember Mr. Abrams. He was under order, Dr. Belkin, Mr. Abrams, no one can bother the Rav to give, the Rav is giving shir, and he was kulo, his whole mind was in the shir. Yitzchak, one time in the 1950s, Mr. Abrams, pale like a sheep, a white sheep, is knocking on the door, and he says, Rabbi Soloveitchik, there is a very difficult problem. You must come to the telephone. All right, the Rav got up, came back 10 minutes later. You know what the problem was? In the shlachtos that he was giving hashgacha to, a treif animal disappeared among the kosher. Follow? With all the guarantees in the world. Simon, you drive a car? Have you ever been in a crash? Okay, you're a good driver, you're a careful driver. But inevitable. Thank God I'd never been in a crash in Israel, but I can tell you in Newark, I remember turning and went right into a katones. I was tired. Then I was young, and the rabbinate, the yeshiva, I had to get to Davin. I didn't want to go in. Whatever. Rush hour. You can be the... Accidents happen. There is no such thing as kashrut without Sefer Yoredeya. You're learning Yoredeya? Yes or no? What are you learning Yoredeya for? Why? By the way, today in Israel, basically we have no more shilas anymore. We have my daughter has 3 sinks, I have 2 sinks, 2 ovens. Show me how I can have a shila. But you learn Yoredeya when you're running a house, kids are running around, you're going to find the fleshik spoon in the milchik drawer. You follow me? So accidents will happen, and the rav is called that, and the rav of what he paskin. If I recall correctly, he wound up being able to that al pi halacha, it would be beetle. There would be beetle involved, but I don't recall all the details, and neither did he talk about all the details. He went back to the shir, but he had paskin what he paskin. So you're going to have accidents, but when you have treif and kosher, one owner. And this comes right down to modern times. And Morty and Charlie, you're connected to the city where it happened. Give me the name of the city. Begins with a B. Mein Shtetl, Baltimore, the 1970s. It was headline news in every Israeli paper. My wife gets mad at me when I eat from that Rav's Heksha. It's a respectable Heksha, Rabbi Heinemann, right or wrong? My wife, she's a kanayet. She said, how do you eat from that Heksha? Now what happened was very simple. The Mizrahi of Baltimore, there once was a big Mizrahi in Baltimore. Today Baltimore is a different type of city. The Ne Yisrael crowd has conquered the city. And the Ne Yisrael crowd, it's not total Haredi, but it's certainly not total YU. It's someplace in the middle, if you know what I'm talking about. So, you got to raise money. What's the purpose of Mizrahi? Mizrahi here in Israel, we're all Mizrahiites. We live here, we work here, we pay taxes here, we serve in the army here, we work for the Mossad here. Everything we do is mitzvah Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. But in Baltimore, you have to raise money. So they decided to have a boat ride. I've been on one of these boat rides. I was told it was Mizrahi. Here it said, when you say share it, that's even worse. Let me stick to Mizrahi for the sake of quote Hashem Hashtei Dava. But I was told it was Mizrahi, but they were raising funds, the boat ride. I've been on one of these boat rides, Glatt Kosher, and you have entertainment, and a rabbi speaks, and the people in the mingle, and everyone paid $100 for the privilege. Well, if you have 100 people, what is that, $10,000? You have some money for tzedakah? All right. So the women who went to arrange it, or the committee that went to arrange it, this was a caterer, and they went to his secretary, and they arranged the date, the boat, and everything. And on the boat, the food is fabulous. Everyone is praising it, and then they serve dessert. And people say, wait a minute, this is real ice cream. This is real ice cream. And they go into the kitchen, glatt treif. No one told the people making the arrangement that this caterer has a kosher division and a treif division. So the secretary, no one said kosher. She figured it's a regular affair. If sheret haplate is really something, because it means give them gumit button payers, and they're telling, they're arranging, and it must have been a goya. I was checked in at El Al, an Afro-American lady, there wasn't a nice lady in her life. I couldn't believe the cover they gave to someone. It's an yesterday I cried that they cried to me that my health insurance went up by endless hundreds of shekel a month because of my age, but age has advantage. Wow. So this Afro, who knows who registered them? Treif. No one asked for kosher. Anyway, people started throwing up on the boat. Not so simple. They were geyser tainit. Are you aware of this? In Baltimore, they were geyser tainit. Marif picked it up. Yediyah picked it up. All the newspapers here. Geyser tainit. But you see, this is a terrible problem. And the Aguda Tarabanim ranted and raved and passed laws and outlawed. It goes on until today. And this was the same story with Kosher Best, if that's the name, I forget already, in Chicago also, it must be 20, 25 years ago. The OU, I told you, I can't go into details now, but the OU never had a scandal with Goyim. It's two scandals in Kashrut with Jews. And one of them was the kosher dressed poultry that all the caterers used out of Chicago, and a non-Jewish kid, a teenage kid who worked, came to a rabbi, Erev Yom Kippur, knocks on his door and says, "Rabbi, my conscience is bothering me. My priest told me to speak to you." And he told the rabbi that in the middle of the owner of the big kosher plant would go with him to another plant that he owned, and he would be transferring cartons. So they set up, the rabbonim set up the people to watch, and it turned out in the middle of the night he was transferring from the treif to the kosher. Do I have to go any further? What did you just have in Muncie? It's not ancient history. So many people, they were in Muncie, they were kashering in Ramat Eshkol. I saw with my own eyes. I said, "What are you kashering for? What do you have to do with Muncie?" Oh, when their parents came to visit the poor kids starving in Israel, they brought meat with them. They should have good American meat, good American poultry, not to eat what we have here in Israel. And it turned out, glatt treif. Okay, so you should know this problem, essentially, under the conditions that existed in the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, into modern times is insoluble. Wherever you have money, people are going to do things in a chicanerous fashion, and all the hashgacha in the world will not help. Now, the Agudas Rabbanim did what it could. It didn't necessarily win the bull, even with their chukim and mishpatim and enactments and takanat and gezeirat, because am kishei orifu. And this is the... No one realizes the miracles of the state of Israel. People ask, why do we say Hallel Yom HaTzmut? All right, I can tell you the establishment of the state, a miracle. The rush, the reawakening of Russian Jewry, a great miracle, second only to the establishment of the state. But there's a greater miracle that we have an army. An army is a chain of command. My brother just called me, his grandson got engaged. So I asked him, what does this grandson do? My brother, either his grandchildren are into heavy learning or they're into heavy work in the army. He's already a skanma fakeh plugar in the army. He's a captain. He's a young kid, just got engaged, rising the ranks. You know what it means, an army? You have to salute an officer? Jews salute someone? Just think for a minute. My wife once came back, my son-in-law, Danny, my oldest son-in-law, who was in the army 20 years, so he had in his army car, he gave her a lift. She had to be in Tel Aviv. She was taking an exam on it. She had a master's in library science, so the exam was in Tel Aviv. It was years and years ago. So as they're leaving Jerusalem, my son-in-law stops the car at the point out of Jerusalem where all the soldiers hitchhike. And he says where he's going to, and anyone going there, he has room for three more. And when he gets out of the car, all these kids, 19, 20 years old, 18 years old, they all salute. They see the rank on his shoulders. My wife almost passed out. Jews saluting another Jew? Rebellious kids who are going to change the whole world? Do I have to tell you? What Woodstock was all about. God have mercy. But this is a miracle that Jews have an army. Wow. Wow. And I can give you all the halacha, but I did basic. You know, Charlie, what happens if there's no commander around and 10 soldiers are caught in a difficult situation and everyone has a different idea? What do you do? Highest ranking officer. Whatever he says, you have to follow. What if you have a machlokes between two high-ranking officers? You can follow either one. Then you have freedom of choice. But it's amazing. There was a master sergeant and a sergeant. They're arguing. You have to follow the master sergeant. And this, we Jews are incapable. Miracle that we have an army and that the structure somehow survives. All right. Now we come... We move on, Reb Blazer, Agudas HaRabbanim. Okay. Gentlemen, time does not stand still. Many a Rebbe bemoans the new generation. He thinks back, what I taught so many years ago, the people I saw, what's going to be with the kids today? And they're very depressed and they're very negative. If a person has brains, we have survived so many generations since Briat Adam, since Matan Torah, Kanayin Hara, with all the depreciation of the generations. It's an open Gemara, but nevertheless, the Gemara says, Yiftach Bedaro Kashmul Bedaro. Ein l'dayan ela ma she'inav ruot. Ein l'shofet, I think is the exact quote. Ha'shofet ha'she'yeh b'yamim ahem. You have to deal with reality, and life continues. And I can tell you the secret of being a successful Rebbe, te'heinoach l'shocheret. I'm quoting from Pirkei Avot. No one knows what that means. Be nice to the kid with black hair. Shcho'er shachar. Now what does it mean? It's very simple. You're a Rebbe, you're a big shot. You yet saw Rav Soloveitchik, you yet spoke and learning with Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, Rav Shlomo Gorenshik, Rav Avadji Yosef, Rav Yisra Yehuda Antamin, Rav Yitzchak Nisim. You're a big shot. Don't think that you're bigger than that kid with the black hair. One day he's going to be in your position. And he's going to be as big as you. And if you're a good Rebbe, you're going to pray that he be even bigger than you. Ein av makanebet benovi, ein rav makanebet tamidah. I'm quoting the Gemara as well. So, see, time does not stand still. While all this is happening, we spoke about the East European Jews arriving in America in the 1870s, the 1880s. Now it's the 1930s. You have a second generation. You have a third generation. Life is changing. We settle in Israel. We spoke English to our children. All my children are at home in English. But grandchildren, they were born here. Some are still at home in English because their parents are speaking English. Others, Hebrew's their language. They're geniuses. They rattle off in Hebrew at the age of two, quicker and smarter and better than I can at the age of 80. You follow? They must be geniuses. That's all I can say. Great-grandchildren, how many will be at home in English? It's inevitable. Now, nothing to cry about. This is the reality. We're proud of it. Alinu Atsa, we resuscitated Hebrew. It's a living language. It's beyond words. That's another miracle. Halavai Yaleyeza Ben Yehuda. You could see what happened here. My dear students, what's happening in America? Yeah, the grandparents of Nogad at Yiddish. They were lost in English. The second generation already born in America? All right. My parents spoke Yiddish, but English was their native language. They were born in Harlem. They went to school. Public school was all in English. The third generation already is totally Americanized. They're shifting sands. And even if people remained religious and they were the few and far between, I refer you to my classmate, Dr. Grach. Simon, you know what Dr. Grach is? Hagon Reb Chaim, Rabbi Dr. Professor Chaim Soloveitchik, the Rav's only son, my classmate. The students call him Dr. Grach. It's a good, students are very smart. They hit the nail on the head. Doctor, you wouldn't call him Harav. They relate to him. Dr. Professor Grach, Hagon Reb Chaim. You can't deny the fact that he's Hagon, understand? So, rupture and reconstruction. It's a new world. And most left, but those who remained, they're now from Jews. Second generation, third generation. All right. The OU, what happens with the OU is a miracle. We all should bless the OU. They make it possible for us. I was at the end of the world in Cairns, Australia, falling off into the Great Barrier Reef, and I had kosher food due to the OU. Can go into any supermarket in the world, including China, and you have kosher products, OU. It's beyond words. So you see, they're shifting gears. The OU was organized, we spoke about it last term, 1898. It's an Americanized orthodoxy, but it began with Spanish Portuguese, that's important for you, Simon. It began with German Orthodox Jews, Rabbi Drachman, Rabbi Pereira Mendes. Pereira Mendes was a predecessor to David de Sola Poole, who we spoke about yesterday. But now, by the 1920s, 30s, it's flooded with East European Jews who want to be from and remain from and care about Yiddishkeit. Now you have the women organization. And I have to tell you, I don't want to offend any of the males sitting here. Women are far smarter than men. If you don't believe me, open the Gemara. Nida bina yitera binashim. And I will testify my wife has more sense than I do. I knew Yitzchak's first wife, Zichrona Lebracha, Judy. Knew who had more seichel, it's you or Judy. Be honest. Of course, of course. What are we talking here? Right, I can't start up with Vicar Yomo, but everyone understands what I'm saying. My dear students, the women, we alluded to this last term, started clamoring, we want kosher products. And Rabbi Herbert S. Goldstein and a few other rabbanim and the OU, and they came up with an idea that was revolutionary. Kashrut is a public service. It has nothing to do with making money. All right, we have to send the Mashiach. You have to pay for the Mashiach, but you pay the OU. The Mashiach never touches money in the presence of the factory he supervises. Not only that, if you know what's going on in Israel and all the accusations being made, the Mashkiach who works for the OU is not allowed to accept any gifts from the people he supervises. And I saw that with my own eyes. I saw an OU set up where the Mashkiach took us in for ice cream and he insisted on paying for the ice cream. He said, no, I'm not allowed to take anything because I supervise this chain of stores. This is how the OU began. These were the concepts, revolutionary. Do you know what's going on in Israel? Jack, am I right or wrong? You're up to date in Israel? What's going on with Mandelblit and the Rabbanut and the Supreme Court? Here you have Mashgichem. Who pays them labas? No, you're going to go and usher. Something went wrong and it's going to cost them 100,000 shekel to straighten out. You'll keep your mouth shut. You want to get paid. You give Hashgacha and he gives you food for the rest of the week, free of charge. When I was teaching in Machon Gold, so Rabbi Findel, Mayor Findel, should live and be well. So he was trying to find out. This is the early 70s. He was here in sabbatical. And I think he writes about it in his memoir. He put out a book of looking for a minion, how West Hempstead began. It's a lot of school, yeah, the Findel family. Anyone here related to them? A fabulous family. So he interviewing the people who work in Machon Gold. So he's interviewing the kitchen staff. And they tell him, yeah, we do take a big can. You know, you at Machon Gold would get 100 cans, big cans of pickle. So we take off a can. This is part of working in Israel. In addition to your salary, you take off a can of pickle, a can of mayonnaise, a ketchup. You follow? This goes with working for Machon Gold. That when I started working, it's like there was also told a little stationery. No, you take it home. A pen. This is part of working in Israel. Clips. In addition to your salary, it's understood that the worker's allowed to take a little bit home. No, the mashgiach. He's getting food, he's getting for Shabbos, he's getting kugel, he's getting cholent. No, how can he give hashgacha? See, the OU was revolutionary. Now, it all began, watch what I'm leading into. You never thought of this, watch. It all began with crackers. All right, it was a little company, and we spoke about it land. You can see, if you go online, you can get pictures of the original crackers and the supervision. Ah, but then the OU got a very big contract, Heinz. When they got Heinz, that ultimately changes all of kashrut in the modern world. Here is a major plant, as American as blueberry pie, as apple pie, as cherry pie, as turkey on Thanksgiving. And you are giving a heksha to this plant. No, Yomo, Heinz makes only kosher vegetarian baked beans. No, pork and beans, their biggest seller. One tremendous plant. You're giving heksha. Oh, my dear students, this began World War II at the time. It was before World War II, so I can't say World War III. But this began World War II with the Agudas HaRabbanim. You with me? Here, the Agudas HaRabbanim is saying, and rightfully so, you can't have heksher on a store where one side is kosher, one side is treif. You can't have heksher where a guy has one business on this block kosher, two blocks away another business treif, the same owner. And here these rotten, vicious, malicious, heinous, hideous, depraved, degenerate, debauched, surreptitious, phony American youngsters who think they know something about kashrut are going to give a heksha to a goyisha firm, Heinz, mit baked beans, mit pork? Ribbono shel Olam. You see what's happening here? And this was a tremendous battle, Vic, in the 1930s.
Was this L'Shem Shemayim, or this was just...
Yitzchak, I would like to believe it was partially L'Shem Shemayim. I would partially. Now, I have to tell you, and this story reverberated when I was a kid. It was from the 1930s. I was born in 37, so, but I you know... A gentleman who survived the Holocaust, he's no longer alive, but I write about it in Washington. He one time confronted me and said, Rabbi Rakefet, what were you doing when we were suffering in 1944 in the camps and the death camps? What were you? You know, I said to him, Mr. Schreidman, I was in short pants then. What could I do? I was a kid. So I have to, I was born in 37, but it doesn't mean I lived it, but the gossip I still heard in 1940. The gossip. What was the gossip? Do you remember? It was claimed, by the way, someone looking for a master's thesis. By the way, to the fellows from Reeds, if you need credit for supplementary rabbinic, my courses give you credit, okay? And be aware, I don't give exams. You have to come. You have to be here. There's no textbook for what I'm teaching. It's ongoing. And if you come and I learn your name, you get credit for the course. If you need it, if you don't need it, that means you're learning L'Shem Shemayim. Okay. Anyway, coming back here, one can, they claim, in New Jersey, there was a can of pork and beans Heinz marked OU kosher, as if it was pure baked beans. Someone opened the can, and in addition to baked beans, they found pork. This has to be researched. Did it ever happen? There is, you will find material about it. It was a famous incident. Silver era, very fascinating, silver era. Page 145. Here's what Reb Lazer Silver, as president of the Igudas Harbanim, wrote to William Weiss, then the president of the Orthodox Union. Notice the name William Weiss. This already is an Ashkenazi, it's not the old Spanish-Portuguese crowd. And he writes to him, all the leaders of our rabbinical organization have warned you to desist from granting supervision to factories which contain both kosher and treif products. You will cause the children of Israel to eat non-kosher food by such hechsherim. Notice the next line. Leave the responsibility for kashrut supervision to the genuine rabbanim who know how to avoid making such errors. I warn you against saying, depart, I pray you, from the tents of the manufacturers of both kosher and treif products. Now, that's Reb Lazer Silver's letter. We'll get the response in a minute, but did you notice something in that letter? Mm-hmm. Leave the responsibility to the genuine Rabbanim who will know how to make, to avoid making such errors. Genuine Rabbanim. See, there's another problem beneath the surface which we'll come to in great detail that's going to haunt us for many, many months of study. The Agudas HaRabbanim. Let me bring it down to the classroom. People come to meet me and they take their children and I hear them saying to their children, this is a great rabbi. And the kids are looking at me cross-eyed. My dear students, how can Rakefet be a Talmud Chacham? Look what he looks like. I don't see it. I don't see payas. I don't see a white shirt. I don't see black pants. I don't see a black hat. And I tell these people, the children are too young to be introduced, just tell them this is our Rakefet. Don't create schisms for them what a rabbi should be. But you see, one generation to the other generation, the Agudas HaRabbanim, look what they looked like. What did the Rav's father tell him on that memorable day in 1932 when he's about to give the shir for the Agudas HaRabbanim on the Lower East Side? And Yitzchak, you heard it from the Rav, I heard it from the Rav, I heard it from the Rav many times, because privately too, he told me, but I heard him speak publicly when he eulogized Reb Lazer Silver in 68. So the Rav said, right before I went on Aliyah, so the Rav said, his father told him, mein Sohn, seid nicht nispoil von de Shen Rabbonim, ihr werdet sehen, wenn ihr geht in einen Zimmer. Say, alle gucken euch schön und ganz Greise Rabbonim. My son, don't be overly impressed with the rabbis waiting for you to hear the shir. You're going to walk in, they're all dressed properly, long beards. He says, thank God some of them have good memories. They haven't opened a sefer since the day they arrived in the United States. But since the Hanim, there's only one. Erken Lemonin, he knows how to learn. From Em Dafman Hodden Neda. Gotta be afraid. Yeah, but then he'll sit in back with a high hat. And that's Reb Lazer Silver. He knows how to learn. And the Reb said, when I finished the shir, Everyone gave me a Yashikayach, who was a shina in Avodas Yom HaKippurim. That shir later appears where Baron Lichtenstein wrote up the Rav's Chidushei Torah on Avodas Yom HaKippurim. It was published here in Israel by Mossad Rav Kook. And the Rav said, everyone gave me Yashikayach. And Reb Lezer, while he's shaking my hand, is slipping a little paper to me. I put the paper in my pocket. And the Rav said, when I got back to my parents' apartment, I took the paper out. And he asked me 6 or 7 tremendous questions on my shir. So now, here you have these rabbanim. And you have the YU students of that era. The rabbanim looked at them. Who the heck are these kids? Ignoramuses. Boors. They'll amount to nothing. Simon, how many Daf Gemara have you learned in your life since you started growing up in Atlanta, Georgia? Now give me a figure, a ballpark figure, 100, 150? 100. No, I don't want to embarrass you. Shas is over 2,000 Dapim. When are you going to get there? You're over 20 years of age and only 100. Ribbono shel Olam, the whole future of the Jewish people falls on your shoulders. Ah. If you understand, Havi Noach L'Shocheret, that yes, I'll admit, when I was your age, I also only knew 100 daf. But today, Baruch Hashem, I didn't learn a word in yeshiva. All yeshiva gave me was the key, the mechanism to know how to learn, to know what to look for, to know how to develop your mind. When you leave yeshiva, you're an amaretz. You get smicha, which really should read. We certify that Ani Rothkopf is an amaretz aboard the oraita, but he has the capability to correct us if he will sit and learn and be a Yerei Shamayim for the next 120 years. You follow? That's the way smicha should read. But these people, the Eltera Rabbana, came from Europe. Did they go to high school? Absolutely not. Did they go to elementary school? You know what's going on in New York today with the schools won't let in the state investigators. Baruch Hashem, everyone's going to have to come in Aliyah. They have to wonder if France, they're running away because they killed them on the streets. Britain, they have to run away. I've never seen such anti-Semitism in my life. Who the head of the Labour Party is. And in America, Alech Sidma have to come in Aliyah because this is the only country where you can raise kids who don't know that 2 and 2 are 4. But these kids, give them a chance. In Europe, you didn't have elementary school, you didn't have high school, you didn't have college, you didn't have graduate school, you didn't have to get a master's and a doctorate. So you sat and learned, but you stopped learning at the age of 21. Give credit, these American kids, look what came out of YU. Come on, Reb Heschel Schachter, Reb Morty Willig, Reb Michael Rosenzweig, one by one, Reb Baruch Simon, one by one, look what came out of it. All right. But you see, this is part of the generation conflict. That letter says it all. Who the heck are you schnips? What do you know? Speak English. Was ken men shasim paiskim? What kind of pilpul can you give? And you're giving kashrut? And you're giving kashrut to Himes? Now the answer. And I have to tell you, this was a serious question. It may have happened. It may have happened. It may very well have happened. The answer that Mr. Weiss writes is fabulous. I want to ask William Weiss. It's not the later Weiss. There was another Weiss, the Yekka, who headed RJJ. Samson Rafal, wasn't he Weiss? Samson Rafal Weiss. He was named, like, maybe even be a descendant of Rav Hirsch. Okay. Baruch Ata Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Nehyeh V'Dvaro. The answer says something very brilliant and very accurate. It refers back to what I said 20 minutes, a half hour ago. Look, there's no way you can keep kosher without mistakes. If there wouldn't be mistakes, there wouldn't be a Yoredeya on all the laws. Forget about Avelut and those laws and Stucker and Sefer Torah and Gerith. But the heart of Yoredeya, Basav Chalav, Tarot, Shchita, Trefat. We make mistakes, that's part of life. It's impossible to have a system that is perfect because we are only human beings. I can tell you a cute story that happened in my time in the yeshiva. Life has moved on. These people, I know where they're at today, but do you ever hear of the Bronx? Bronx had over 1 million Jews in it. What percentage were from, if it was more than 2-3%, I'm overstating the case. So there was Mount Eden Park in the Bronx. Mount Eden Park, you can walk from there to Yankee Stadium in 10 minutes, okay? So place it, get a feeling where it is. Mount Eden Park was filled with Jews on Shabbos. Whatever frumkeit there was in the Bronx when I was growing up centered around Mount Eden Park. Rabbi Yochanan Gerelick lived near Mount Eden Park. Rabbi Noach Bunstein lived near Mount Eden Park. Rabbi Chenoch Fishman lived. These were all Rashi Yeshiva, Shanghai crowned. Why you, my Rebbe? So this classmate of mine, an American as apple pie, is in Mount Eden, and he sees a nice girl. They say she came up from Mexico City to meet a nice Jewish boy. She spoke English with an accent, obviously. Her native language was Spanish and Yiddish. No, boy meets girl, thank God, there's a concept of love in the world. They fell in love, they got engaged, they get married. Now this girl, remember, her English was a third language to her. So she buys margarine with a heksher. She baste the chicken in margarine. Weeks and weeks went by, and my chaver suddenly discovered the margarine was chalavi, was OU, but dairy margarine. You still have in Israel, by the way, the rabbinate is not happy about it. Most margarine is parav, but there is one or two that Telma makes that are milchix, and they have to say in big, big letters, chalavi, chalavi, you have to know to look for it. No? Now, this fellow, newlywed for months and months, all his fleishig dishes have had boiling chicken, yatso leded, with margarine on the dishes, on the silverware, on the glasses. All right, silverware you can kasha. Glasses, I'll say perhaps you can kasha, but maybe you don't have to kasha. You know what I'm referring to, right? It's not for now. The dishes, hepsid maruba, it's not today. Today we throw everything out. It's a world that who uses dishes? In my house we only use chad pami. I write about it with the Rav. If you read the Rav, you know what I wrote there. Chad pami, is it covered Shabbos? I don't know. But one thing I can tell you, it's covered your wife. It saves her life. Now we don't make Shabbos anymore. It's at our daughter. So I notice my daughter always has a big crowd, and it's always chad pami. Beautiful dishes. You have silverware today. You can't tell if it's real or chad pami. It looks the real McCoy. I have kosher in America because I don't want to travel with a kosher. If I have to make kiddush Shabbos, you can't tell the difference. Baruch Hashem. No, he asked the Rav. The Rav went through all the sources. We discussed it in class. The Rav said, I don't know about the Paschal. Finally, he gave a psak that you can use the dishes, their fleishiks, it's ain't a ben yomo, you don't know, but you can't use them all at the same time. One dish you have to put aside. If it's a set for 12, and you have 12 guests, 11 can have the fancy dishes, and one person has to have a simple weekday fleishig dish. Do you remember this, Yitzchak? It was with Julie. Remember who I'm talking about? Don't want to mention his name, although there's nothing distasteful that I'm saying. But boy, you can't have life without mistakes. It's inevitable. So the OU answered very beautifully. We don't know whether this really happened. We immediately dislodged four famous rabbonim at the time, I'll give you the names in a moment, with balabatim. They went to the store, they checked it out, they brought up other cans. We're not sure that this happened. Heinz claims it couldn't have happened because the serial numbers don't correspond with what was treif, what was kosher. It seems there was not a mistake, but perhaps there was a mistake. But isn't it better to have 1 million cans that are kosher, even if you run the risk that they may occasionally be a mistake? And this was a brilliant answer. What did I say the percentage of tafas was before? People estimated minimum 40% of the products being sold as kosher with treif. Some said as much as 60%. Mom, money, what went on? This is the answer. At the conference with you and your associates at which Mr. Konigsberg and I were present. In other words, they met with the Agudat HaRabbanim. And I have to say, Mr. Konigsberg, the name that's mentioned here, is my wife's family. One second, I'll give you the name. Ben Konigsberg, correct. From the east side, am I right? Right under you. And he was a lawyer, am I correct? He was a lawyer. Then a lay vice president and member of the Administrative Council of the Orthodox Union. So you had Ben Konigsberg, you had William Weiss. You had four rabbanim. Rabbi Yechiel Chalap, recognize the name? Who was dean of the yeshiva for so many decades and still has an office there? That's his son, Rabbi Zvulun Chalap. That was his father. Rabbi Herbert S. Goldstein, Westside Institutional Synagogue, the legendary Rabbi Goldstein. Rabbi Solomon Reichman, recognized the name. He and Chalap were both heavily involved in Hechsherim and Rabbis in the Bronx. And Rabbi Reichman has a son in Geula who has a kollel here. Rabbi Rafael Reichman, one of the brisker in that element today. And Rabbi Benzion Rosenblum, who was a musmach of the yeshiva out of the 20s, a fine rav, a fine Talmud Chacham. And we asked for the production of the evidence, and up to date, it has not been produced. Now, furthermore, a committee of our rabbinical council consisting of Rabbis Chalap, Goldstein, Reichman, and Rosenblum immediately, upon hearing rumors of the incident, went to the grocery store in the New Jersey town and purchased other cans of beans and found them to be in proper condition. The Heinz company representatives do not concede the mislabeling of the one can of beans claimed to be mislabeled, especially as it seems to be conceded that the cold mark on the can indicates that the contents were not intended to be kosher beans. But listen to the next paragraph. The fact that neither you nor we had our attention called to more than one questionable can out of millions that are produced indicates that there is no cause for further publication of the incident. The Union of the Orthodox Congregations of America is conducting its kashrut policy for the benefit of the community on a non-commercial basis. And it is our desire to cooperate with all organizations for the purpose of establishing more kosher products and better supervision on behalf of our people. And you can go on and on. It's a beautiful letter. But here you see cultures in conflict. For the elder rabbanim, this was their panasa. This was the way they made a living. more and more congregations couldn't take them as Rabbanim because the new generation was English speaking. The new generation did not want Rabbanim to preach to them in Yiddish, even if they understood Yiddish. But in school, they learned in English. In college, they studied in English. They wanted the shul to catch up with Western civilization. And these Rabbanim Nebuch, they needed panasa. Willy-nilly, they were formed to kashrut. And here comes along an American organization with entirely different concepts. Kashrut is a public service. Kashrut, the cheaper we can make it, the better we can make it, the more people who will keep kosher. We owe it to our people. It is not to make a living. It is a public sacred service to the Jewish people. And you have worlds in conflict. Now, we'll go further in the future, but I just want to say, to tie this topic together, to the credit of Reb Lazer Silver, as the years went on, he became much closer to the OU, to its supervision, to its concepts of life. And here you have to give credit probably to his children. Reb Lazer had four children. His son, Reb David Leib Silver, was a graduate of the yeshiva, a musmach, a classmate of Rabbi Emanuel Rachman. They both studied together in the yeshiva in the 1920s. It opened the door to Reb Lazer of understanding the American mind. No one was closer to Reb Lazer than his own son and Rabbi Emanuel Rachman, because Rabbi Emanuel Rachman's father was a Yerupayishe Rav, Rabbi David Rachman of Albany. Rabbi David Rachman of Albany was a very interesting story, worthy of a movie. He was a man who came from Europe. He was a man who was a Yerupayishe Rav. He was a man who entered the rabbinate in America, and he saw the compromises the rabbis have to make and what kashrut is about and to make a living. And he ran away from the rabbinate and he opened a grocery store in Albany, a Shomer Shabbos grocery store. And Manny Rachman would describe how Gentiles would line up Saturday night. They would only buy in that grocery store because there wasn't a more honest proprietor than David Rachman. They loved him, Jew and Gentile, very successful financially. Gentiles knew if they're three stars in the sky, the store will shortly be reopened. And this had influence. His son, who became a medical doctor, was a member, this was a younger son than David Leib. That son was a member of the very first graduating class of Yeshiva College. He had a son-in-law also from Yeshiva College, also a medical doctor. His youngest daughter later marries Rabbi Yehuda Gershuni, which is a story unto itself. He already was a Litvisha Gadol who studied with Rav Kook in Israel, came to America. A Gon never really found his niche in life, but a Gon and well-known, and he married Bezivik Sheni. It was her first marriage, but his second in the United States. But you see, the atmosphere, the children, Reb Lazer had that ability to become part of the new world. He recognized shifting gears. He recognized shifting winds. He recognized the tides are changing. Reb Lazer had that ability, ultimately, if not a full-fledged member of the modern world, but as he will see, he was enough of a member that following World War II, he gradually becomes a very difficult persona for Agudat Yisrael. The organization that he established in America, Agudat Yisrael, as time moves on and American Orthodoxy following World War II moves more right and more right and more right, they have a lot of difficulty dealing with Reb Lazer Silva, because he was the one who could say, Aguda is my big sister, but Mizrahi is my little sister. I don't believe there was any Aguda leader subsequently, take Reb Yitzvei, take the Novominska today, take whatever Aguda Yisrael member of the Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah in the United States, I'd like to see someone be able to mouth that statement. I have two sisters, my eldest sister, Agudat Yisrael, and my youngest sister, Mizrahi. That was Reb Lazer. So with all that you see here, with the infighting and all that's going on, you have to give credit that he gradually understood the OU and the ability to give hashgacha and not to treat it as a fundraiser. Rabbanim, Americanized, speaking in English from Talmidei Chachamim. He saw his own son who didn't succeed him, but later goes to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. It's the only shtela. Anyone here from Harrisburg? The only shtela that Reb David Leib Silva ever had. He remained in Harrisburg, first Rav for over 60 years, I believe, and then Rabbi Emeritus till the day he died. And this had an impact on the father. Sometimes the Heshiv Lebanim al Avotam Velev Avot al Habanim, sometimes it's the parents who influence the children, but in a healthy relationship, it's children who inevitably also influence the parents. All right, so this is Reb Lazer. There's more material. You'll see the chapter. You'll understand. But the problems of Kashrut, as long as Reb Lazer was active, the Agudas HaRabbanim, there was always strife. There was always criticism. It's a problem that hung fire for many decades. I'll end off this part of the lecture. I'll give you another source, introduce another lady, Trudy Weiss Rosmarin. Yitzchak remembers her. I remember her, Trudy Weiss, a Jewish specter, right. She came from an Orthodox background. She was married to an Orthodox man, and I don't know what happened. In the middle of life, she became conservative. I believe they got divorced.
He wouldn't give her a get.
I know they got divorced. I remember it was a lot of gossip in the Anglo-Jewish press. So when she became conservative, she was very offended and fought a battle. I still remember the Jewish Spectator. Remember, it was white paper, black type, nothing fancy about it, like a prospectus.
It had very quality articles.
Yeah, it had top quality articles. People of intelligence wrote for her, and she was, I believe she had a doctorate as well. I believe it was a PhD as well. You should know, one of her sons went totally right wing, and she has descendants that all wear black hats, even though she became conservative. So she was very offended that the Agudas HaRabbanim and no one would give the conservative rabbis credence, that their Heksher was not accepted. So in one of the issues of Jewish Spectator, I can give you the year, I quote the year here, it's as late as 1960, she takes aim at the Agudas HaRabbanim and Reb Lazer Silva, and she raises a very interesting issue, which the Rav raised in class in the 1950s. Now just think for a minute. Do any of you eat the meat slaughtered outside of Israel? Israel every year puts up a tender. They need 100 tons of meat, 500 tons of meat. Who will give them thousands of cattle at the best price? And then they send out teams of sheikhtim. Many years they slaughtered in Romania. They go to South America. You got to go where there are lots of cattle and they can give you a good price, and you send tremendous teams to slaughter. Now, tremendous problems arise. Why? The meat is slaughtered there. Now, part of the meat is kosher there, but originally, all the meat slaughtered there was shipped to Israel. So it arrives in Israel on a boat a week later, half a week later, and then it's first processed in Israel. No, you've all learned your Adaya. There's one simple problem. Meat that's slaughtered has to be washed. It's a Goyinic enactment every 72 hours. You have to keep the meat fresh so you can get the blood out when you kosher it. No, when the meat is shipped by boat to Israel, how can you wash off the meat on the boat? It's basically an impossibility. Are you allowed to eat it? No, this was the tremendous machlokes about the food in Israel. I remember in my early days teaching a michlala, everyone was asking an opinion. Well, the Rav held, Rav Herzog held, the Sri Deyesh held, there is nothing. Why do you have to wash off the meat to keep the meat fresh? There's nothing that keeps the meat fresher when it's in a deep freeze. You follow? And therefore, the 72-hour clock stops running, and only when you take the meat out in Israel, you have to figure out within a day, within a day and a half, you have to kosher the meat, and there's no problem whatsoever. I remember Rabbi Schoenfeld asking the Rav for his daughter, who was my Talmidan, Michala, and the Rav looked at him, that this is your Shaila, it's Zil Krebe Rafu, it's axiomatic that there's no Shaila with the meat. Many people were mocked, man. That was one of the great differences between regular kosher meat and glatt kosher meat. Basically speaking, the glatt kosher was all slaughtered here in Israel, so there was never a problem of shipping it across the ocean or across the Mediterranean. The problem has been ameliorated to a certain degree because now, because glatt kosher slaughtered here was much more expensive, we don't have that many cattle running around. I've never yet seen a cow running in Jerusalem or in Tel Aviv for that matter, or even in Haifa. The Golan Heights, you can see cattle running around, but it's a real problem. So now they slaughter the meat wherever they slaughter, and they kosher the meat as well before it's sent out. So that totally removes the shaila of the 72 hours. Now, what was the Rav shaila? In the 1950s, the 1960s, and probably today as well, where are all the cattle running around in America? In the Midwest. So the cattle are slaughtered in America, in the Midwest, and you're now shipping to New York, and you're shipping, everything is being shipped via refrigerated train cars. But it's not frozen, it's not that cold, and you have to wash off the meat. And the great juncture for washing the meat was Pittsburgh. No, in Pittsburgh, a lot of frum Jews picked up a little extra money by going to the train station when the trains would do in and washing off the meat. Aye, but there's one problem. What do you do when Shabbos and Yontif, could you imagine you can have a 3-day deal? Shabbos, Rosh Hashanah, 1, 2, 3 days, one after another, there's the meat coming to Pittsburgh, and who can wash off the meat? Did you ever hear this, Shaila? So I believe the Rav Paskind with others that none Jews can be trained to wash off the meat. And I remember the Rav saying that Amol Kamemet Samach Zayin Af Agoy V'Af Yid, and boy, is that true. At times you can depend more upon a Gentile than upon a Jew. And you know, with the OU, I think I've told you more than once, even today, that the OU never, ever had a problem not with Heinz, not with any multi-billionaire conglomeration of Goyim. I saw with my own eyes the whole Goyish stamp of some big plant that was getting the OU, coming into the OU to a dinner to sign the contract. You should see the Derech Eretz they had for Rabbi Ganek and the OU staff of Unsgezucht, that when we go into the rabbinate, our Balabatim should have that Derech Eretz for us, that those non-Jews had for the OU people. They never had a problem with Goyim. Two problems with Jews, the one we spoke about, and then the other problem I told you many times with the riches, the Parava cream riches. So what makes the cream Parava? They have to buy a synthetic sodium caseinate. So could you imagine the highest ranking officer in the rich corporation, a worldwide conglomeration, the vice president in charge of purchase was a Jew. And could you imagine they found he was buying sodium caseinate, the real, billing it as if it was artificial, twice the price, pocketing the difference, and Jews were getting a part of a product that was really milchiks. And he was indicted, they were going to put him on trial, he would have gone to jail. It's an unbelievable story. Under his daughter's chuppah, he had a heart attack and died under the chuppah. So sometimes you don't need Sefer Iyyuv, if you see it right before your eyes. Those were the only scandals that I know of. There was another scandal. Remember with Dov, he remembered. Remember last year, there was a scandal once that one person involved in Hashgacha was taking money illegally. And that member was a Jew who needed money, and the OU, he was caught. And he had to sell his house and pay back everything. And that was with someone from within. Not that it affected Kashrut. The Kashrut was fine, but the money, it didn't balance out. And the controller of the OU discovered there's a discrepancy with the money. And that controller is in this very class. He's in America now. He'll be back soon. But when I told the story, he started to laugh. I said, "Why are you laughing?" He said, "Rebbe, I was the one who discovered I was the controller for the OU at the time." Rabbi Dov Zakheim, not to be confused with his first cousin, the assistant minister of defense, if I have the right title in the United States, also Dov Zakheim. And this problem with the OU, with the meat, with the Agudat HaRabbanim, ultimately, as you know, it reached a very happy conclusion. And nowadays, there are many, or there's some, I should say, members of the Agudat HaRabbanim who actually work for the OU. The OU staff goes above and beyond. You don't have to be a modern Orthodox rabbi. There are endless people working for the OU who are Hasidish, who are Satma, who are Chabad, who are Yeshivish. And the OU today, what a major organization. And what they do with the millions of dollars that come in, we have to stand up when we mention the word OU, because all the profit that will come in from kosher supervision, beyond paying the mashgichim and the whole system of check and balances and mashgichim on top of the mashgichim, what an unbelievable system. All that money is plowed back into NCSY. And I need not tell you what the NCSY has done for the Jewish people. In 60 years of teaching, my best students in every school I ever taught were NCSY people. Inevitably, one by one by one. I went out of my way, a Talmud came to see me in America. There's a nothing, totally assimilated, a very bright kid in high school picked up today, a Rav, a position in Rabbanan and a big position for the OU. And I can name one by one, boys and girls. And the OU estimates it costs $50,000 to make a kid from. That includes the camps and the what they do and the programs and going to Israel and the scholarships. But when you make a kid come back to his roots and discover what means to be a Jew, you look at the kid today, you look at the kid 50 years from now, out of that one kid you can fill a shoe with all his descendants, and their success in raising children who are from today is 90% or more. So God bless the OU. Finally, all this being said, it's not William Weiss who put the OU on the map. It's not Ben Konigsberg. It's not Rabbi Goldstein or Chalap or Reichman or Rosenblum. All these people contributed. But one man put the OU on the map. And we'll talk about him next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. We'll start this year. The name, Alexander Rosenberg. He was the person. Rabbi Rosenberg, the details next week. I yet had the privilege of knowing him personally in his final years. I met him, besides hearing him speak and meeting him in the United States at rabbinic conventions, but we had a mutual friend in Israel, Ruby Gross, who was a good friend of the Rosenberg family, a good friend of Rabbi Rosenberg, a good friend of his son. What a story, what an individual, what a person. And he put the OU on the map. It began before his time, but he came in when it was in its nascent stage, when it was embryonic, and all the rules and regulations and dignity and comfort, it was Rabbi Rosenberg. And of course, then we get, he was succeeded by Rabbi Wein, but that was a brief tenure. And then you get to Rabbi Menachem Genag, my dear friend, colleague, and the man I have named publicly, the Tsar of Kashrut. That is my nickname for Rabbi Genag. The New York Yankees, if you follow what's happening, they're celebrating all the nicknames of their different players now. So for Rabbi Genag, we'll go with the name, the Tsar of Kashrut. Aaron Judge, Rabbi Aaron Hashof, that's my nickname for Aaron Judge, and I'm very upset, gets hit by a pitch ball on the wrist, and who knows when he's coming back. Yitzchak, you grew up in Boston, Ribbono Shel Olam, and you never saw Ted Williams play. You should be, you saw him play at least?
One day,
okay, Baruch Hashem, Charlie, Boston, Tom DiMaggio, Johnny Pesky. Oh, what a team they had. What and some of them were admirable people. You take Tom DiMaggio, had a good family life. This is not like his brother Joe. You follow me? This was Italiana, who lived properly. Pardon me for using your last name. You understand? And Johnny Pesky, Bobby Dorr. These were G'dayla Masheba Aretz. My dear students, my dear friends, my dear colleagues. Okay, Ani Modela Kadosh Baruch Hu, we got off to a running start this year. I can tell you Sunday Shir, Be'ezrat Hashem, we pick up with a Shaila that the Noda Bihuda got, and you'll see it's very different than most Shailat that you can imagine. And if these Shailas and Kaddish really have no answers, you'll see what I'll tell you Sunday. And I'll give you a gift at the end. I'll come back to the story I've told many times and now put into halacha context with Mrs. Rebel shaking and losing. Can't believe what she heard the Kavna Rav tell her husband, but it's all understandable when you do the research, learn the Torah, and have a shtikl alitvish moach, a little bit of a Lithuanian mind. What did we do today? We finished up the kashrut. We just have to deal with Alexander Rosenberg. And we're alluding, we're coming, we're sailing into the whole problem of Rakudas HaRabbanim and the what becomes the RCA. And then we're hitting the major issues of Agudas Yisrael in America and Vat Hatzalah. And this is all part of the Blazer Silva's life. He was the focal figure, the Rav worshipped the ground he walked in. What happened to the Rav was what the Rabbi did to him and the Kashrut scandal and all that he went through in Boston. So miraculously, God placed him in a classroom in Washington Heights, room 102, a little class, 20 students at first, 25, 30, and that's when he became the Rav. Until then, he was Rav Soloveitchik, Rabbi Soloveitchik. I don't want to use the other term that was used to describe him, you know, what he's still staying till today in Lakewood and elsewhere. But I am a Talmud, I can't reiterate, although a book just came out on the Rav essays, and in there I see they use the term that he was referred to. And he became the Rav in the classroom. That's a different story.
But we have to also give credit to Rabbi Belkin, because he's the one that said,
unbelievable.
You teach,
your responsibility is to teach, I will raise the money. All right, the freebies. If anyone here is interested in what Russia was all about, I'm offering three books. One of them was given in the Israeli State Department. It's all out of the 70s and 80s. It's not contemporary. Soviet dissidents, their struggle for human rights. This is describing the dissidents, what they were going through, what's happening. The book is copyrighted 1980, 1985. So it's a good description of what the communist empire was about in the 1970s. This is Techno Bandits. And this goes on until today with Russia, with China. Israel has been robbed too. They robbing intelligence. And it's a very fascinating book with the comments on the Israeli Ministry of Defense inside. Obviously it's outdated, but it's of interest if this is something that attracts you. This is the greatest. It's an American kid. By the way, his grandparents may have been Rabbanim. Pfeiffer was a big rebbe in the Bronx, died in 1937. His Pfeiffer, if he's alive today, he's an old man, but here he's a young kid, just became a lawyer, finished his degree, I think at Columbia, and he goes to Moscow. The book is 1964. He describes the justice system under the communists. Very fascinating, where the comrades judge the comrades, and here they kill a guy, they sense him, he was drunk, he killed someone. So it's not that he just killed someone. This is the way a Soviet citizen behaves? And his own comrade sentenced him to death, and before you know it, he's gone. Very fascinating. Once again, I hold out the latest edition of Ma'ayan, which is a continuation of Torah Derech Eretz. If anyone wants it, enjoy it. This is material on Rabbi Moshe Shmuel Glasner. It's a tradition article. It's about, he was the Rav of Cloisenberg. He was a firm Yid, 100%. You can't sign it, you can't sign the Shtreimel of Shabbos. He went to the Shtreimel. But he was very open-minded. So this follows up what I gave out yesterday, a generation of conservative Hasidim. This is from Morty Tarrigan about his relative, firmest baseball player ever, Maury Aronovich, who kept kosher while a major league ball player. His statistics, and I can tell you, if not for World War II, he would have been an all-star many times over. Wow. Okay. This, Yitzchak, you may want to take from Michael Miller. They have discovered, the Baseball Hall of Fame has discovered Mo Berg. Mo Berg from Newark. His brother was a medical doctor my time in Maplewood, New Jersey. And Mo Berg, part of Babe Ruth's team that visited Japan. And what did he do in Japan? Went up to the roof of the biggest building, the hospital, making believe he's visiting the daughter of the American ambassador who was hospitalized. He's going up with flowers. Quickly throws the flowers away, gets up to the roof and takes movies of the entire area, which was used in America bombing Tokyo, their plans for invasion, etc., etc. Mo Berg later works for what today is the CIA, and as Casey Stengel said about him, he can speak seven languages, but he can't hit in any of them. This is about Isaac Herzog becoming head of the Jewish agency, tying him together with his grandfather. Halavai Simon, he should remember his grandfather was in Reed Rakafat Aaron, I believe it's Chalik Aleph, where I have a whole piece on his grandfather. Chaim Herzog called me to thank me for that piece. I published it in Midrashia. Midrashia was called Midrashia Noam, its publication. Rabbi Yossi Gordon, this is Chabad. Anyone who has a heart for Chabad, very interesting. I knew his father very, very well. Baseball Hall of Fame, a catcher and a spy. That's from the New York Times. Take it from Yitzchak. Take it from Michael. This is very fascinating. They're opening up the Lubavitcher archives of all the pictures people sent the Rebbe. Can you identify? And here, if you're a Litvisher guy, you're not going to understand it at all. Vic, do you understand this? I have students send me pictures of their... I got this morning pictures of my dear student's dog. I named him Reverend Tuxie. And I get pictures people send me. You know why? They want to share it with someone they look up to. You understand? People sent to the Rebbe, went into the archives. Now they have thousands of pictures. They're revealing who are they. Very interesting. This is for me and Yitzchak. Mori, for you as well. Charlie, this is the Rebbe telling off old elderly people who think they can't do anything. Organize a kollel for the retirees to sit and learn. The Rebbe, going back many, many years. This is, all I can tell you is, again, the Rebbe with women who can't have children. The Rebbe's brachas, I don't know. As a Litvak, I have my problems understanding it, but wow, I have to bow my head. If anyone's interested, a very nice description of Rav Steinman, Rav Aaron Yehuda Leib Steinman, and very interesting individual. He could understand us, even though he was in a slightly different world. He could understand us very well. This is a tshura given out at a wedding recently with the family's correspondence with the Rebbe. Very fascinating. At a Chabad wedding, you give out a gift. Anyone who has a stickle, a Hasidic soul, I recommend taking it, looking at it, and understanding what it's about. This is in Yonadiyoma, New York Times. Half of yeshivas under investigation denied entry to education officials, city says. And Rav Kefet is licking his chops. They should all be thrown out and come in Aliyah. And Baruch Hashem, even though they'll demonstrate against the army and this and that, some of their kids will work out, become total Jews, be up there. Again, Chabad story, an unbelievable story. The 5 pounds, Mrs. Yocheved Daphna, how she comes to Chabad, the Rebbe, the relationship, how she, and the children know they're the Rebbe's children. I taught a girl in Midreshet Maria, she's a very famous person today, as a doctor from Bar Ilan, husband's a well-known Mike Talmud, a well-known rabbi. Pear, you've heard the name? And she uses the word yes, but her mother had her, then they couldn't have children for so many years. And finally, the Rebbe gave a bracha, and I think there's a 17-year difference between the elder daughter and the younger daughter. And she once said to me, yes, my younger daughter is the Rebbe's daughter, and my younger sister. And here I see the same term. This is what I gave out yesterday. No one's interested, but you should read it to see where we're at. Conservative reform, a merger for the rabbi and the labor leader, the head of the unions in America, a woman, Randy Weingarten, married a woman, Rabbi Sharon Ann Kleinbaum, married at La Marina, rest in New York, Judge Michelle Schreier of New York Housing Court performed the wedding with Rabbi Sharon Cohn Einsfeld, the president of Hebrew College, leading the ceremony, etc., etc. Guts are upitting all Jews, and we'll be lucky if they don't bring a flood to the world. Here's a collector's item. This is the famous issue of Makor Rishon, where you're writing to the most famous people who built Israel. What would you write to them at the 70th anniversary? And here's where you have the famous letter that I quoted in America time and time again, with the man who was born in to Natura Kata and he's writing to his grandfather, his uncle, I should say, great uncle or uncle, Reb Amram Blau, Yehuda Meshi Zahav, and he's telling his uncle, if you would see what Israel looks like today, how happy you would be. And the same theme appeared in Makor Rishon this Friday when they interviewed Rav Shlomo Minahar's daughter, and Rebbetzin Steinberg, and she, I knew her father, I taught with him in Mechala. When I taught in Mechala, the giants of the world were teaching there. And Rav Shlomo Minahar, she writes about her father, how the Chilul Shabbos heard him when he walked. If he could be alive today and see how many more people are Shomrei Shabbos, how happy he would be. And finally, Michael Steinhardt trying to spend billions of dollars to make people aware that they're Jewish. And a very nice issue. The painter involved here is a Frum individual. I actually want to take a copy and show my grandchild, my who's an artist. And if they would only realize the only way we can perpetuate the Jewish people is by Shmirat Shabbat, Kashrut, Tarat Mishpacha, and learning Torah, there's no other way. My dear students, I want to thank you very much for honoring me with your attendance. I want to thank all those listening across the world for all the nice words that were said to me in every street I walked in, wherever I was. This past summer, I barely got back alive to Israel on the plane. My wife says next time she's putting a bag over my head. I didn't know I was, Vic called me a rock star, but nothing compares to the compliment I got on the plane. And I later Googled who complimented me. Wow, a living legend. Vic, do you believe that? A living legend? I just see flesh and blood, a guy struggling to keep going. So much I want to accomplish, so much I have to work on the new book until I release it for publication, and so much to learn, and another Siyum Shas. A living legend? I would say a striving individual who's alive and kicking. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vidanya. Thank you to the Levensteins for gracing me with their presence. Simon, who's going to handle the tapes? You'll handle it, and then put it back in my box, okay? Because then I have peace of mind, and then I recharge it, because I don't want to have a situation where in the middle, kaput. I used the new microphone today, so I hope we've solved that problem.
10-20 years ago, Rav Menachem Ganef was in the chair. You asked me to give him a lift home.
Right.
If I remember correctly.
Right.
So on the ride home, I don't know if they told you what he said to me. I was schmoozing about different things.
Turned it off? Good.
So,
good.
Great. Now it's off.
I know him. It's Mori Arnovich.
That's your relative.
Yeah, but I know him. It wasn't just a relative.
Right.
I knew him.
Baruch Hashem. Did you have his? Do you have his statistics?
You know, my grandchildren have. They knew this, so they. Especially with my son was in Atlanta for a year, so they got really into baseball. But then they found this, and they went.
This gentleman is from Atlanta.
Your son was there? You
know, what?
Your son was there, you said?
Yeah, Michael Tarragon.
You know, this Richard McPhee.
Huh.
You know,
yeah.
Dion.
Yeah.
What's your last name?
Italiander.
Oh.
Was he in Cocoa Hills?
Huh?
Was he in Cocoa Hills?
Yeah, they lived in...
Wow.
You come